This is Business of Home. I'm your host, Dennis Scully. Every week, I'll be talking to leaders and innovators from all corners of the home industry. My guest this week is Nicola Karopoulos, CEO of Italian furniture maker Poltronofrau. 100-year-old company with plenty of heritage under its belt, Poltronofrau took English furniture and gave it an Italian twist. Now the company is a European institution, known for its fine leather work and for supplying interiors to Italy's iconic sports car makers like Ferrari and Maserati. Over here in the States, Poltronofrau is a little less well known. But Nicola is hoping to change that. We spoke about how his company is tapping into a growing appetite for interior design in China, the mistake it made when it first came to America, and what it's like to look at the market with Italian glasses on. This podcast is sponsored by Room & Board. For over 40 years, Room & Board has been furnishing homes with artisan-crafted modern furniture and decor. And now businesses and industry professionals are turning to them to help furnish their office, hotel, restaurant, and commercial spaces. When you work with the Room & Board Business Interiors team, you'll enjoy volume discounts, commercial product warranties, customized delivery options, free warehousing, and much more. Visit roomandboard.com for inspiration on your next project and to learn more. This podcast is also sponsored by Krypton Home Fabric. Because everyone deserves a soft place to land, there's Krypton Home Fabric. Krypton exists to make your interiors as thoughtful as they are beautiful, and as welcoming as they are brilliant. With earth-friendly spill, odor, and stain protection, Krypton leads the industry in fabric intelligence with a 28-year heritage of innovations that have changed the way fabrics can be used in design. This year, Krypton will introduce the first-ever performance fabrics for the home made with at least 50% recycled cotton and all of the spill repellents and stain protection you'd expect from Krypton for the life of the fabrics. Explore the world of Krypton and discover the many places to source it at krypton.com. And now, on with the show. I think for listeners, we should give people the sort of the full history of the company so they get a context. So tell us when the company sort of first began, and it wasn't originally where it is now, if I understand.
Yeah, exactly. The company was founded in 1912, so 109 years ago, in Turin by a gentleman called Renzo Frau. Renzo Frau was a former army officer who had the idea of bringing over to Italy some furniture that he had seen in Britain and adapt them to the Italian taste. After 50 years in Turin, had lots of turmoil and things happened. Renzo Frau himself passed away only 14 years after the company was founded, and the company was on the verge of bankruptcy. It was bought by a gentleman coming from Tolentino, who was the representative of a tannery that was the major creditor of Poltronofrau. And the only thing that he could actually take back was the name of the company and two workers that came from Turin to Tolentino. It was a long journey at that time because Turin is 500 miles away from Tolentino. And the bet that was made at that time was to bring over to this place a company producing leather upholstered furniture. Why a bet? Because this is a territory where we are that is historically well known for its craftsmanship in leather, but not in leather furniture, in leather goods like shoes or belts or bags. And the bet was to apply the same craftsmanship and expertise also to furniture. After more than 60 years, I can tell you that the bet was won.
Well, so when I went back and sort of studied the origin story, I was charmed by this story of Renzo Frau discovering the Chesterfield sofa over in the UK, and did he bring some versions of that back to try and figure out how to make it sort of more of the Italian style?
Actually, he brought some images. We don't have any evidence that he brought the physical piece of furniture. So this may belong to the legend. However, what is sure is that he actually made the original model, the Chesterfield, more Italian, more feminine, rounder. He took away, for example, the brass studs that are typical of the British Chesterfield, and replaced them with these nice, very gentle leather folds. So actually, everything is much rounder, much softer, and gives also an idea of additional comfort.
I see. Okay. I was curious about that in part because I was speaking to an American designer who buys from you, and I asked her to sort of tell me what it is about Poltrona Frau and what they do and why it's different from something that you might be able to buy from an American company. And one of the words that she used was this sort of this softness and this there's just a different there's not as harsh a line or not as firm a structure with Poltrona Frau, and that's what she loves.
And I can say that that's true. And I can also say that that we kept producing the Chester sofa exactly with the same materials as we used to do at the times of Renzo Frau. So biconical stainless steel springs and for the padding this goose feather and also the a special seagrass that exists only on the shores of North Africa that is used to ensure comfort and at the same time absorb humidity, and the frame that is made in massive wood in order to guarantee durability of the product.
Well, and you mentioned when sort of going through the company history, the company sort of changed hands a few times, and there were various investors, I guess, at different times. And if I remember correctly, the Ferrari group at one point had a financial interest in the company. Yes.
And there was people that actually played an important role in the history of Ferrari, the Montezemolo family that were among the major shareholders of the company. And in 2014, it was bought by the Hayworth Group. And since then, the company belongs to the Hayworth Group as a part of a subgroup within the Hayworth Group that is called Lifestyle Design that includes all the more residential and design companies of the group. Poltrona Frau, Cassina, Cappellini, and more recently Janus & Cie and Cecotti Collezioni, and in the United States, also a strong distribution footprint with Luminaire and Design in San Francisco.
Well, so and many people might not be familiar with the Hayworth Group, but it's a very large family-run company with a couple of $1 billion, sort of in revenues, if I recall. So it's quite a sizable operation. And at the time that Hayworth made the acquisition, what was your understanding of why they wanted to acquire the company? What was so appealing about acquiring Poltrona Frau to them, do you think?
In my understanding, the idea of enriching the proposition of Hayward with companies that had such a great heritage, great history, and great importance and relevance in the field of design was a way to complement Hayward offering that was mainly concentrated on commercial interiors and mainly on the office furniture world. So I think that it was a very intelligent move because it gave the right complement to what Hayward was doing in the United States.
And has the recent acquisition of Knoll by Herman Miller, has that been a topic of internal discussion? And is that seen as a big move?
This is certainly a big move. It has not been discussed with our shareholders yet, but it will change the framework of the world in which we live and we compete. At the same time, I can say that our group has got a very strong foundation and has got all the right weapons and tools to compete in this ever-changing scenario.
Well, that's interesting that you talk about the sort of the weapons and tools, and I wonder I wonder what some of those weapons and tools are today, and sort of how you're thinking about competing in the market today. It's such an unusual time.
Well, it is an unusual time, but it's a time that is generally positive for home furnishing. We are experiencing a very positive period under this point of view, which actually started in the second half of 2020. Homes have become the centers of our life. People had to spend a lot of time at home, and they have invested in objects that could make this time better. And this is the contribution that Poltrona Frau wants to bring, offering global lifestyle solutions, also considering the learnings that came from the pandemic.
Well, and what have been some of your learnings from the pandemic?
Well, lots of learnings. Certainly, as far as the products, as I said, products that could be more hybrid, so could be actually functional to different needs. A dining table that could also serve, for example, as a working desk, or a dining chair that could serve also as a task chair, a working chair. We also learned that you can tell a lot about your products and your brand by using the digital tools. Another big learning that came from the pandemic is that things change very fast, and you always have to be a plan B and a plan C ready in your pocket.
Krypton is a trusted fabric technology partner to the top names in the design industry. You'll find Krypton in your favorite design center showrooms, such as Cravit, Fabricut, Tebow, Cortina Leather, United, and Greenhouse, and in design-minded retail furniture trade programs such as Our House, CB2, Crate & Barrel, West Elm, and so many more. Krypton is also a featured brand at over 80 High Point Market furniture showrooms. Find your favorite go-to resources today at krypton.com.
Well, now, if I remember correctly, China is your biggest market, yes?
Yeah, it has become our biggest market last year, soon after the pandemic in China.
So post-pandemic, it became the biggest market.
Yeah, it was our second market. It became our biggest market.
And so you saw the pandemic before many others did, perhaps then, yes?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we realized that the things were changing, or we could enter a period of difficulties already in February last year. But then Italy was sadly one of the first countries to get into this unpleasant situation followed. So the good thing is that China was the first country to recover, and they certainly gave us a big boost in the recovery and restart of the company.
Well, and how did China become such a big market for you? What was it that the Chinese responded to? I know that they care a great deal about fashion and luxury brands. And do they tend to associate an Italian furniture company? Does it sort of share some of the aura of Italian fashion brands? Is that part of the appeal for them?
I would say so. And this is the reason that why we want also to leverage this aura, as you say. Also, the fact that our brand is associated to some of the most prestigious automotive brands like Ferrari, for which we are the exclusive suppliers of leather interiors in their cars, or Maserati and other important brands, makes the Poltrona Frau brand more recognizable and more appealing to these customers.
Do I remember correctly that the first issue of Elle Decor that came out in the U.S. had your famous red, is it that Vanity Fair chair of yours that was on the cover?
I was a kid.
You were a small boy back then.
But certainly the Vanity Fair has been an icon of our of our brand.
Well, and we should explain for listeners the Vanity Chair. Maybe you should explain the Vanity Fair chair and sort of its classic shape. And it's
the Vanity Fair armchair is what is usually called also the Mickey Mouse armchair. So it's it's an armchair with big arms and the round shape that actually is the clear example of the Art Deco in the period between the decades of 20 and 30, the 20s and 30s of the last century. So it's a timeless icon, and we are proud to be associated to this icon.
Well, back when you were just a boy, the first issue of Elle Decor in the United States came out, and there was your Vanity Fair chair with a lovely model sitting on it, and I thought it was such a great introduction of that brand, and what it made me think about how Elle was trying to sort of bring fashion and home together in the introduction of that magazine, and it seemed like your piece of furniture was such an iconic piece to put there and to sort of make that bold statement. And I think going back to China, I think we talked about this recently, you and I, but I'm curious about the role that interior designers play in the Asian market.
As I said before, Chinese and Asian customers are fast learners, and they have learned a lot of the habits coming from the Western world. The intermediation of interior designer was a peculiar feature of the American market only 10 or 15 years ago. Today, it has become a very common element to the various geographies. So it is true what you say, that today interior designers play a fundamental role in determining the choices and orienting the choices of clients in China, in many Asian countries, but also in Europe. We do have several directly owned and operated stores, and we can monitor the interaction of our sales consultants with the clients, and I can say that more and more the interaction is with the interior designers that actually guide the choices of their clients.
You mentioned the U.S. market and 10 or 15 years ago, seeing what an enormous influence interior designers had, the decision-making process around your product. Was that an adjustment for your company when you first sort of started coming into the American market in a big way?
Well, it was certainly an adjustment because we were used to the more traditional forms of retail that were dominant in Europe, certainly in Italy, where the client would interact directly with the store with no intermediation. The point is that I can say that our stores or design stores have become places where you don't buy a product. Because if you really want to buy just a product, you can go over the internet and you can buy whatever you wish at the best possible price. I think that when you go into a design store, you are looking for solutions, and the help of an interior decorator and the interaction of this interior designer with the teams operating in the store can create the best and the most tailor-made solution to the client's needs. And I am sure that people buying our furniture has got a value and therefore is perceived as expensive, are looking for exclusive solutions and exclusive experiences. And we, together with the interior designers, are there to provide them with these exclusive solutions.
What do you find the Americans perceive about you? How do they think of Poltrona Frau?
I would like they could think more of Poltrona Frau than they think today, because our awareness is still limited to the few connoisseurs.
So, and why do you think the brand awareness is still limited to these connoisseurs, as you described it, and what is so challenging about getting your name out there in the States?
There are historical reasons. For many years, we have been very strong in the Italian market. We've been concentrating, developing the Italian market. Our distribution was the distribution of a very selective distribution. We opened more than 25 years ago, our first store, direct store in New York, in Soho. We had a circle of clients and connoisseurs, but we never got extensively known, also because our investment in awareness was limited. We were under the conviction that the quality of our product would be enough to make us known and appreciated. Unfortunately, it's not exactly like that. You need to not only to have the best product in terms of quality and in terms of manufacturing, but you also have to appeal your customers and get to be known by your potential customers. I think that we have a very big advantage compared to our Italian competitors. The fact of being part of an American group gives us the possibility of looking at the American market and at the American consumer with the American glasses, not only with Italian glasses like our competitors.
Well, so believe it or not, I was at the opening of your Soho location. And I remember it well.
When you were a kid.
When I was, we don't have to talk about how old I was at the time, but I was there, and it was a time where Soho and the design district that was trying to be built there was going to be the next big thing, and people were going to come flocking to that area, and it was going to be transformational. and many big brands had flagship stores that they would build there. It never really happened. It never really developed in quite the way perhaps people had hoped. Did it make you think at any point, or are you thinking now, that a different strategy or a different location is needed? Did it disappoint you in your expectations over the years, or your company? You were too young to have been there in the beginning. But
that's true. At the beginning, Soho was let's say the center of the design world in New York, but things have changed over the years. Today, we still have our presence in Soho, though we have changed the location, leaving our historical location. We're still in Worcester Street, but more and more we are considering as important for our brand development and for our success in New York and more generally in the United States to find a location where most of our competitors are on Madison Avenue. And I don't know whether we are going to keep our foothold in So, but for sure, we are extensively looking for a new location on Madison Avenue or nearby, because we believe it has become the new destination area for our clients and for the interior designers that relate to our clients.
Yes, I would think that that's where your clients are and they're spending a lot of their time.
That's for sure. So we need to be there. Otherwise, we will be missing an opportunity. That's a fact.
Room & Board offers modern commercial furniture for offices, hotels, restaurants, multifamily housing, and more. From a $79 flat rate delivery to free warehousing and commercial discounts, their dedicated business interiors team is known for high-quality commercial products and outstanding service. Whatever your next project is, you can count on Room & Board to deliver the perfect mix of modern and long-lasting furnishings. Visit roomandboard.com for inspiration on your next project. And now, back to the show.
You mentioned earlier having American ownership has in a way given you the benefit of sort of looking through American glasses versus Italian glasses, perhaps as you look at America. What would Italian glasses sort of make you think as you look at America, and how has an American partner sort of changed your perception a little bit, or how have you perhaps even combined the Italian and American sensibility?
Having the support of local people and local culture and knowledge of the rules of the games is a great advantage. Not that Italian companies don't know that they have to relate to interior designers, but I think that the way Hayworth or other American companies relate to interior designers is certainly more profound and broader, deeper than what companies coming from abroad can do.
You mentioned that there is an opportunity for you to move in a different direction, perhaps, than many of the other Italian brands. There was often this feeling, at least in the U.S., that the Italian companies would all sort of move in the same direction and would often advertise in the same place, or they all would make sure that they had the same espresso maker in their showrooms. There was a lot of uniformity around that. What were some of the sort of classic Italian notions about how to come into the American market, and what did you agree with or disagree with, perhaps, with what they were doing?
Yes, this is what I put under the title, looking at the market with Italian glasses. So doing the same thing in the same way, looking at the same clients, the same distribution, doing the same advertising on the same issues, the same magazines, looking at each other as if we are the major competitors the Italians are the major competitors of Italian brands. I think that American consumers know generally little about Italian companies, and we have to look at those companies that are important for American consumers, for American clients, when it comes to buying furniture for their homes. So I really believe that we should not consider our Italian peers as the competitors to relate to, but we should look at what happens really in the market. We should look at what Restoration Hardware does, what other important retailers do, what other brands that are more rooted in the American consumer behavior. And this will help us a lot, because we have to consider all of this as our real competitors.
You score bonus points by bringing up Restoration Hardware, so congratulations for that. But I'm curious, because one of the ways that Restoration Hardware is trying to compete in the marketplace is bringing this hospitality side of the business, and nothing is more a part of a culture in Italy than hospitality and sort of welcoming and warm. So how do you look at what they are doing? How do you process the moves that they've made, and what do you think of it all?
Well, I think that they are a giant. There's been able to really intercept the needs, the aspirations, and the dreams of clients, and to direct to an offering that is peculiar, but certainly to attract and retain their clients. I wish we could do the same and learn how to do, but of course, without losing our identity and without losing our DNA. I think that we can offer alternative solutions to this model, and the Italian touch can help in this. As you say, the Italian touch can help. Hospitality can be one an important element.
Well, I would think that would come very natural for you. But what is it that you wish that you could replicate about what they are doing?
Well, certainly the ability of portraying a world that becomes aspirational, of having a solution for each cluster of clients. So they are quite broad. They don't appeal only to one client or to a specific segment of client. And the fact that they are very consistent with their promise. And by the way, I also like the locations of their stores. So it's many elements that create a case of success, which we have to look at, knowing that we have other points of strength that we mentioned before. There's the Italian touch and Italian heritage and the craftsmanship and the quality of our product that can certainly have a role in our proposition for the American clients.
Were you, before COVID, were you planning to aggressively open new locations in the United States?
We were planning to expand, but what has happened and what we see can happen gave us a tremendous push forward to accelerate this process, because we believe that we can play our role in the American market.
So, and tell me what that means for you. Tell me what your big plans are.
we haven't spoken at all about digital, but certainly digital is one of the elements that will have to be put into the equation for a better conquest of the American market. The fact that we should be much closer to what American clients expect also in terms of delivery. Typically, our products are made to order. And so also considering the fact that you have endless possibilities of combining products and furnitures, and finishes, may end up waiting for 14, 16 weeks to get your product at home. So I think that this is a disadvantage to certain clients, and developing a stronger and more effective quick ship program as we've started, but we need to make it bigger and more effective than today, can give us a help in this. So the combination of digital presence, the quick ship, the presence in more markets with a better visibility in terms of brand representation are the elements that can make the difference compared to where we were and where we are now still.
What I'm curious about, and this is a challenge for every CEO right now, trying to navigate this time. And you and I touched on this a little bit when we spoke before, this notion that perhaps there is a bit of a bubble in, you can point to many different places. Perhaps the market is a little frothy. Perhaps the cryptocurrency market's a little frothy. The art market. There seem to be a lot of areas where maybe prices are a little high, and we're in this, particularly right now in the U.S. We're in this massive economic expansion, and the question is, first of all, How do you think about this time? Do you think things seem a little overheated in your thinking? And if so, how do you think about the steps, the investments that you want to make in the future? And how do you imagine this expansion lasting, or how do you sort of process it all?
Well, I believe that certainly we are living in a unexpected and to certain extent unexperienced before situation. So if we want to use the word bubble, yes, we may use this word. We are living in a bubble, which means that this situation is bound to end one day or another. What I believe, though, is that the best companies should have the ability to transform what is temporary today into a structural condition of success and leadership. So I think that we should take advantage of this situation, because the market is buoyant and there is a request for home furniture to make the right moves in terms of new stores, new distribution, and new digital and stronger digital presence, and new quick ship programs, influencers, all the nice things that we said, to make sure that we can continue enjoying this situation also in the future. I think that this is the right time to actually work on our side to expand and create the right awareness for Poltrona Frau. Also associating it to not just a design furniture brand, but to something more, as you said, an aura that touches somehow fashion and Italian way of doing things.
Interesting. So help me understand what that would mean.
Well, I believe that you relate to a brand not only for the product that the brand actually can offer you, but also for the values that it represents. So I think that if we stay at the level of product, there are many companies that can offer nice products, comfortable products, nicely made, and so on. But the mix of experiences that a brand like Poltrona Frau, this mix of heritage, contemporary and classical, the fact that we are so global, we are successful in China and in Europe, and we might be in America, and all of this is something that goes beyond the product, and we should be able to actually leverage this unicity of Poltrona Frau.
Does the housing boom in the United States make you think that there are parts of the country where you need to be right now, as you see this big market just exploding in so many parts of the country? Does it make you wish you had more of a presence there, and will you soon?
Well, for sure, I wish to have a stronger and broader presence than what I have today. We do have good partners. We should find more good partners in a lot of areas that are still not covered. I mean, there's a lot of potential. If you consider that we do have only one store in New York, at the end of the day, it's really not enough to support our growth and our expansion. So there's a lot of homework to do, and a lot of efforts that have to be put in place. The good thing is that at least we know what the basics are and what we have to do in order to be more successful and have a better future.
Thank you so much for spending this time with us. I really appreciate it. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you, Dennis. My pleasure. And goodbye to all our American listeners.
Well, and we hope to see you in the States very soon.
Hopefully when I get my vaccine.
Yes.
We'll come.
Yes. We look forward to that. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to keep up with the latest industry news, visit us online at businessofhome.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, browse job postings, or join our BOH Insider membership community for access to exclusive online educational workshops, a free print subscription, a private Facebook group, and more. If you have a note for the podcast, drop us a line at podcast@businessofhome.com. This show was produced by Fred Nikolaus and edited by Albert Burge for Podfly. I'm Dennis Scully. Thanks again for listening. Stay safe and healthy, and I'll see you next week.